Hey, Chicago. What do you say? Cubs gonna win today.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. It's time for the baseball podcast with National baseball writer David Brown. David, how are you?
I'm good, Andy. Thank you for having me on again. I'm excited because big opening day is still like in 3 weeks, but little opening day is coming up soon. Korea, I mean.
Yeah, little opening day. That's the Seoul series?
Yeah.
I thought every series, that they said it's the first, but every series that Oscar Gamble ever played in was a Seoul series.
I was going to make a Don Cornelius joke, but that's better.
Yeah, so that's the that happened to the Cubs once when they started in Japan, where you actually go play some regular season games, then you go back to spring training for a few days, play some games that don't count again, and then you get to start the season.
Right.
It's a very odd setup. Yeah, because the Cubs open, I know this, because Obvious Shirts tweeted out a picture of Ryan Sandberg. Cubs open in 23 days.
Oh.
So that's how
I hope he's doing well.
Yeah, me too. If nothing else, Ryan can bore prostate cancer. That's what we're all hoping for. Ryan, just talk to it. Tell it stories. It'll go away. Trust us, just like viewers do when you pop into the marquee booth.
Oh gosh, as he might say.
Shucky darn. Ryan, don't try not to work so blue. Speaking of the Cubs, they re-added the piece that we were all anxiously awaiting, and they re-signed Cody Bellinger to a 1, 2, maybe a 3-year deal, nobody's sure, for either $30, $60, or $80 million. First off, were you surprised that it was that short? And or did the structure of it at all surprise you?
Well, I'm getting less surprised as we get closer to little and big opening day, with some other guys still holding out who possibly it might be related to Scott Boras. And so I guess I'm getting less surprised, but it, you know, in the whole context of Bellinger's, the arc of his career, getting injured when he did, and how kind of how long that took for him to get healthy. And then, you know, these are things everybody knows, but coming back last year, performing well, but also having those underlying stats that said, we don't understand why he's performing so well. He's not hitting the ball hard enough. And that's just the algorithms talking. It's not necessarily a person, but so, you know, short story long, not necessarily, no. And putting it in the context of the chill of free agency in general, I can see it from ownership standpoint, wanting to be cautious with him anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it's he's one of the weirdest free agents ever. You know, rookie of the year, MVP. But then he had 2 years that were he didn't have bad years. They're terrible. Like, don't even want to put the guy in the lineup bad.
Should be in the minors bad.
And then he goes to the Cubs, and he totally redeems himself, and he's back on the market. And, I mean, I guess in hindsight now we look back, and it's a combination of this is a market where unless you're Japanese, nobody wants to spend any money on you. And then you have everybody like, is he good? Is he maybe do that again, maybe. And so for people like, Scott Boras screwed it up and blah, blah, blah. It certainly seems like there was one team interested in Cody. And he got $30 million this year out of
true.
He went from 12.5 last year to 30. So it seems like he did okay. One thing I'm really interested in is we talk about the Matt Chapman deal, I suppose, in a second. The Bellinger one is different because it's the same one-year, you know, it's a one-year deal with a player option with another player option. But his second year is also for $30 million. So the Cubs are basically like, okay, they must be convinced he's pretty good. Because if he has a terrible year, they're going to owe him $30 million next year.
Right.
But also, I wonder, like, how good a year does he have to feel confident to opt out of the $30 million?
Yeah, does what happened the other day? Zach Wheeler signed a contract with Phillies, a contract extension. And I joked that, why would he do that when he can enjoy the fruits and the lovely free agent process? So, you know, I'm sure that, you know, it's not exactly the same thing, but that's going to be in Bellinger's head. It's like, man, do I want to go through this again? You know, next year? I don't know. And $30 million seems like a pretty good deal for now. Maybe not in if you look at the long view of when players started to get $30 million, but you know, in the context of what ownership is willing and hold and sticking to, you know, I think there's a pretty good chance that he doesn't opt out immediately.
Yeah, I feel like his contract is very likely a 2-year deal.
Yeah,
where and maybe Matt Chapman's is too, but his takes a steeper drop from year to year. It's almost like the Giants are like, we'll give you extra in this year if you'll leave next year. We're making Bob Velvet loves you, and we're making him very happy by re-signing him. But we've got other third basemen. Casey Schmidt can do a pretty good Matt Chapman impression. Right. And maybe we could pay him $2 million to do it instead of 16 to you next year. But, yeah, I mean, and I don't even know if you're Boras, what you look at to try to tell you that teams are going to spend next year. This year, everybody's like, well, the TV money, there's so much uncertainty about that. And I know that's a factor. But is that going to get better? That could very well be worse a year from now.
It could be.
And then, like, well, teams like the Padres aren't spending. Well, they are, but they're not spending new money. They're still spending a lot of their old money. And then the Mets will jump back in at some point because their trillionaire owner is going to get antsy. But it's like, okay, well, if Cody doesn't appeal to the Mets, then what other new market opens next year for him to get the five-year deal that he thinks he's going to get?
It's like the market should be like a bunch of teams that weren't the market, like the Angels and the White Sox and lots of other teams that have huge holes and have spent money before and, you know, aren't doing everything they can to make their rosters better. And I don't know, you know, how does this change? I think fans, do they stop going to games and they stop watching on TV? And they do they make a stink with a nasty letter to the editor? I don't know. It's you know, the fans have to kind of vote with their feet here and say, you know, we need to be more competitive than we are, or else these teams are going to be, you know, teams like the Pirates. There's another place. Bob Nutting is just going to pocket the money. It's the worst owner name, you know, ever, but we have to say it. Nutting. They're going to pocket the tax money, the free agent, you know, the threshold dollars. I mean,
the market is very reflective of the thing that the players were worried about when they agreed to expand the playoffs, which is, we don't need to spend that much because we just need to be one of the, we just need to finish sixth in our league and go to the playoffs. So why do we bother? And you kind of, you're hearing some of that. The being in the same division with the Dodgers creates an issue. So a lot of talk around the Giants with their fans and the people who cover them about how, you know, even though they've added a lot of players, they added Grandson of the Wind and they added Jorge Soler and they traded for Robbie Ray. And at some point in the second half of the season, he'll stagger in off the injured list. And then they added Matt Chapman and they're spending money and they're just under the luxury tax. And they asked Farhan if he would be interested in signing another free agent, which everybody knows would be Ian Snell. And he said, no, I think our lineup's set. And then they went back at the Jorge Soler press conference and he was asked if he was going to add another free agent. He said, no, I think our lineup is set. And he signed Matt Chapman. So, but this whole idea that you hear them talking about, it, it's like, well, we just need to get to like 85 wins. And then we can make the playoffs. This is a team that's actually, I think because they have to play the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks 13 times and the Padres are like, it's tougher for us to get 85 wins than maybe it is if you're hanging out in the NL Central. So we have to get, our bar is higher. We have to keep adding players. But if you're in a cushy division like, say, the Cubs, the pathway to 85 doesn't look all that rough. And it makes you less likely to want to add.
That's basically what Rick had said a couple weeks ago, right? He's like, oh, we should be able to win our division with what we have.
Yeah, that was before they brought Cody back.
Right.
People made a big deal of the fact that Boris was sitting at the table at the press conference. Like, see, he needs to be seen because he's got these other clients. It's like, yeah. You can go back. There's lots of pictures of Scott Boras sitting at the table with a brand new rich guy. Like, he likes, if you'll, you know, you have to, like, get one of those, like, vaudeville hooks.
Right.
To keep Scott off the dais. He's going to be up there otherwise. It was not he was not sending a sign.
And you said before, too, like, you know, Bellinger's making a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not in the grand $200 million, you know, six-year whatever range, but still $30 million is a lot of money. It's not like Boris has failed him that badly.
No. No, and he's going to be a free agent when he's 29 if he wants, and he's going to be a free agent when he's 30 if he wants. I mean, he gets another crack at it. Hell, if he just spends his whole time with the Cubs with the salary last year and his buyout, he'll have made about $100 million just from the Cubs in 4 years. So, yeah, we're not going to hold a big sale for Cody. He ended up where he wanted to be, and, you know, he's certainly making a lot of money. So he's fine, and it's good. You and I talked last time about I forced you to rank the teams in the Central, and I had the Cubs fourth. I think you had them third. I don't think you were quite as negative. And with Cody, I immediately say, well, they should win the division.
Yeah.
I mean, they just, it was such a gaping hole in the middle of their team that they didn't have a good option for if they didn't bring him back, that then they filled with the best possible guy, which is him. And now they should be the best team in that division. One more thing about Boris, I was going to ask you because I don't remember this. So he was explaining away the two bad years from Cody and said, things out of his control happened to him. And he talked about it. He gets an overly vigorous high five in a World Series game after hitting a home run. But then he said, and a fat guy fell on his foot. Who was the fat guy that fell on Cody's foot?
This is not, I wish I had been more aware of this before. I'm not
now,
sure.
Scott didn't put it, he put it a little more eloquently. He said like a 260-pound man stepped on Cody's foot. And I was like, God, who was? I don't even know who that was. Was it, did Jonathan Broxton take him out in a shower? I don't remember. I mean, what in my mind, I pictured like a fat pitcher running into him trying to cover first base. I'm like, but I don't remember that. And I was like, oh, I bet Dave will know.
Who's our Gratterall been around that long? Is he that big?
He was stepping on, who was smushing Cody's foot?
I'll ask my Dodger sources, but I'll have to let you know next time.
I got bad news for Scott, though. The Cubs got plenty of fat pitchers that could step on Cody. Mm. I mean, the starting rotation might have three of them: Jameson Taillon, Jordan Wicks, and Javier Assad. All corpulent, right?
Is Jameson Taillon? Is he?
He was last year.
Oh,
old Jimmy showed up fat and then got off to a terrible start. He's in better shape. They said this year. Pictures, you know, make it look like maybe he is. He hasn't pitched yet, and not injury related. They said so this whole thing about the Cubs say, well, you know, it's all because we're pacing him, and he's going to pitch a simulated game, and then he's going to pitch. Oh, and oh, by the way, his calves hurt, and he can't lift weights or run. It could be, it sounds injury related to me.
By the way, if we do have a bake sale for Cody, make sure he gets the special brownies.
Well, he gets them, and make sure we invite Jordan, Javier, and Jameson will sell a lot.
Oh, right.
Of food. It'll pay for him. Tom Ricketts vigorously writing this stuff down. Speaking of the Cardinals, they got bad news today and they got good news today. The bad news, Sonny Gray hurt his little leg, I believe hamstring. And he's not going to be ready on opening day. The good news is they did something today that they hadn't done all spring. Do you know what that was?
Did they win a game already?
They hit a homer.
Oh, no. Oh, man. It's that bad?
They had not homered until today. Paul Goldschmidt homered, and it's the first Cardinal home run in spring training.
They were working
Cody
on
has
stuff.
Three. He's out homering the Cardinals all by himself. And David Bodie, though.
I'm sure they were working on stuff, you know, yeah. Contact.
David Bodie, though, I don't know if people, Cub fans know this. Other people might not. Greatest, one of the greatest Cactus League players of all time. That league was built for David Bodie.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to joke all the time that he's a first ballot Cactus League Hall of Famer. And then I saw a note over the weekend that they knew that over the weekend they inducted the new class of Cactus League Hall of Famers. There really is one.
Yes, there is.
Rick Monday and Ron Santo were both in the class. Yeah, there is no website for the Cactus League Hall of Fame. I Googled it. I got to see who's in this thing. And there's some pictures. You see some memorabilia, like Greg Maddux has a signed Cub jersey in there.
Physical building?
Well, there's some kind of like spring training experience company. I don't even want to know what that is. Hall of Fame is part of that. So I think it's some guy with a trailer.
Yeah, I was going to say like a mobile RV kind of situation.
And I guarantee he's put more thought and more money into it than the Cubs have with their utility tunnel of fame that they put guys in. Man. But now
$500 million of renovations, and they can't do better than that.
But it's prestigious now. At least Greg Maddux and Ron Santo are in both the Cactus League Hall of Fame and the Utility Tunnel of Fame. And I'm sure there's a lot more.
There's a bar bet waiting for someone to win. Yeah. Well, and this, we talked about the Cubs' chances being improved with Bellinger actually in the lineup. And then we go right to the Cardinals and, Santino is out with a leg injury. It's not, you know, it's not upper body. It's not elbow or shoulder. So that's good. But those things are tricky because they can still delay you too and keep you out of the lineup. So it's not like a long-term deal, but it still has a potential of affecting the pennant race. If it's going to come down to a few games, not having Sonny Gray there's a drip down effect and, you know, it's that's not good news. Lance Lynn's got to save him now.
Yeah.
So
and Kyle Gibson. So they're fine. And
good
Miles.
Good teammate, Kyle Flanders. Gibson. Organizes good extracurriculars. But 5 ERA, too.
Yeah.
So you take the good and the bad.
Yeah. Well, but the Cubs also some really bad injury news. Ian Happ pulled his hamstring. He might not be ready for opening day. And I was bemoaning the timing of it. I was like, why couldn't it have happened 3 weeks later?
Oh.
Does that mean? That seems mean. So there's a veritable, just, there's all kinds of, the Cubs have all kinds of options now for left field if he's not ready to go opening day. Mike Tauchman.
His projections are pretty, aren't bad. The algorithms still like Ian Happ.
Yes.
You know? I mean, you might regret your stance at some time.
No, I will never regret it. Making fun of him is my part of my DNA. Fun.
Okay.
No, we Mike Donahue and I did Remember This Crap a couple of weeks ago where we ranked all the left fielders in Cubs history. And Ian Happ the last 2 years has a 7.4 WAR over the 2 years combined. 4.4 2 years ago and 3 last year. There's, other than Billy Williams, there is not a lot of 4-win seasons in Cubs left fielder history. Most of them are Billy Williams and Rick Stevenson. Riggs was big back at the turn of the last century.
Right.
That still doesn't mean I think he's any damn good. But we do understand that they've gotten decent production out of him. I just feel like he could go away and we could get that production of somebody that's not him.
It doesn't jump off the page or the video necessarily. And it doesn't seem like, wow, he's been almost as good as Billy Williams out there. It does not seem like he has.
I mean, Billy was putting up 7 more years, not 4.
Okay. Well, even that
but
close.
But basically, the whole thing was there were huge gaps in Cub history where, and a lot of Hall of Famers would come by for a season.
Yeah.
Chuck Klein, Ralph Kiner for a couple of years. Yeah. Was Ralph Hall of Famer? Yeah, Ralph's Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
For a couple of years, we would occasionally just find a new one. Monty Irvin played left field for the Cubs for 1 year. His final year. He went to Chicago for a year and looked around and went, fuck this, and retired. He had a good year for the Cubs.
Was that to be close to Buck O'Neill? Would that have been around then?
He was at the very, obviously, he retired at the end. He was at the end of his career. He'd been with the Giants for like 8 years, but the Cubs got him in the Rule 5 draft.
Wow.
Which obviously did not work the way it works now, because right. He'd not be eligible for the Rule 5 draft.
I'm not sure if that's how the White Sox got Tom Seaver, but it was something like that,
yeah.
Where he was on the major league roster for the Mets, and then he wasn't protected. I'm not sure if that's Rule 5 or just something that's like it. And then they picked him and then went to his house or his hotel room. It was like Jerry and Eddie, the story goes, and knocked on the door, and he wouldn't let him in. He's like, no, away from me.
I don't blame him. I don't want to wear those uniforms.
Oh. I mean, horizontal stripes? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, but, well, there's certain body types that didn't look good in those.
Most of them, I think.
Yeah, Tom's was one of them. He didn't look great in those uniforms. But he won his 300th game for them.
He did. Called by the Hawk.
Let's see.
It happened in New York, so it worked out.
Lucas Giolito tore his Tommy John. He caught the disease. We really need a vaccine for that. I know RFK Jr. wouldn't be in favor of it, but think of all the arms we could save if we come up with a Tommy John disease vaccine. So now his deal looks pretty good. He signed a 1-year deal with a player option.
He'll be ready to go just about the time it's over.
Pretty much. So then there were people, well, maybe they'll go after Ian Snell. It's like, oh, that was what was preventing it? It was Lucas Giolito was in the rotation.
Hey, you're gonna start me calling him Ian pretty soon. I do that by mistake all the time.
Is it Ian?
Ian Snell is like a pirate.
Oh. Who is it?
It's now I don't remember anymore. Not Nate.
Toby.
That's another Snell. Huh?
Toby Snell. That's not right.
Not Toby either.
Blake. God damn it.
Blake, yes.
Ah, no, I do that all the time. I always picture the right guy. I know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I see the skinny left-hander with the little goatee.
It bothers me that I do it.
Blake. You're right.
Blake.
Who's Ian?
Not
you're right,
Ian or
pirate. That's the problem with being old. I wouldn't sign if I were the I would tell you, if I were the Red Sox, I would not sign Ian Snell. I don't think he'd help.
What about Jordan Montgomery? They've been linked to him.
But it's funny. They were like, "What's this Blake?" I got the name wrong. They're like, "Well, now they'll go get."
Oh,
Blake.
You wouldn't sign Ian Snell. Either.
I wouldn't sign Ian Snell. No, I wouldn't.
Wait,
I don't think he'd
help. 45 years old and black. What are you doing here?
But it's like I don't think I hope that just the mere presence of Lucas Giolito wasn't the reason they weren't going after Blake Snell.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Right.
Oh, we're set. Can't afford you. Now you can. The Red Sox are in a weird period of austerity.
Yeah, it's like they won't commit to just not signing anybody. They'll sign some people to make it look good or to get people to stop complaining for 24 hours, something like that. And then they just won't take it that next step. I guess it's kind of how you said it with the Giants. You know, they're in the same division with teams where you really have to spend more or be like the Rays or whatever to compete. That's not necessarily true. Like the Blue Jays are up there. I think they're probably top five payroll. And the Red Sox should be too, but yeah, John Henry is won't put his John Henry on too many big deals right now, unless it like involves soccer or the theater.
Right.
His other interests.
And the Cubs are that, but not to that extreme. At least the way the Red Sox have been in the last few years. The Red Sox are at a point where it's like, why are you spending any of these guys then? If it's just going to be a half measure and you're just going to like kind of make prop your payroll up, you know, to make it look respectable, but you're not going to, you have holes that you're just not going to fill. Why bother? You might as well go cheap if you're going to do that.
Well, they don't have they don't have a fully developmental minor league either, where they're just bringing them in other methods. I mean, they have some good young talent, but it's not, like the Dodgers, could get away with their payroll isn't even that high right now for this year, but they have other means of bringing in players. So the Red Sox don't have that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the Dodgers, we talked about before, they're the counter to the argument about just, the competitive balance tax is just, those penalties are so onerous. If you have to pay it, then you're going to lose draft picks and you're going to lose international money. You're not going to have a good farm system, so you got to pick one or the other. And there's the Dodgers, who repeatedly go over. They're back over again this year. But they got under it last year. They had a 100-win team last year,
right?
And they slid back under because they knew they were going to go crazy with Shohei. All that stuff, and they have like the second or third best farm system in baseball, which just proves that if you can, there's money you can spend that doesn't count on the competitive balance tax, and it's things like hiring scouts and hiring player development people, and they just spend there, and they figure that will, they'll counter any ill effects of the luxury tax by just being really good at the other parts, and it works. But the Red Sox will be fine. They got Craig Breslow as their GM. He was the Cubs' pitch lab genius. The Cubs have all those. I mean, there's just been a wash in great young arms for. And Theo's back. And everybody's like, oh, Theo. It's like, yeah, Theo is back because they gave him an ownership stake. And he's going to hop on a conference call three times a year. And I'm sure he'll be a little more interested, but he's not back to run the baseball operations.
Right.
So he's not going to come in and save you. He's just another smart dude. Maybe the one smart dude they've got.
Do you think his time in the MLB front office showed him that he doesn't want to be commissioner? I don't even know if that's something that was in the cards, but for real, people talked about it like maybe it was.
Would you want to have to deal with those?
Yeah. Owners? No.
I think what it showed Theo is he wants to own a baseball team, which I think he already knew. And he's going to have to latch on to, he's got a lot of money, but he doesn't have baseball owner money.
Right.
He's going to have to find a billionaire and rope
him. We'll let him run it.
Yeah. And say, here, I'll just put me in charge of this and I'll spend your money wisely. Leave me alone.
Sounds doable. I don't have a name for him right now, but that sounds like something that could happen.
Yeah. Maybe Todd Ricketts. I'm taking my money out of the team. I'm going to go buy the A's. And Theo and I are going to run it. Have you talked to Theo? No. Well, it's probably not going to happen. But yeah, so there are still two of the, so Matt Chapman signed with the Giants. He's going to play third base. It looks like they're going to go, so they had the worst defense in the National League last year. They made 117 errors. They were awful. And so they're going to, they, one of their big focuses was to improve the defense. And they have, their projected shortstop is a rookie, Marco Luciano. But they also signed Nick Ahmed. And it's starting to smell like Nick is going to be their opening day shortstop.
Right.
Which would vastly improve their defense with Chapman and Ahmed over whatever was left of Brandon Crawford last year, who's now a Cardinal, by the way. And he's not going to help with the home run total, I don't think. And Luciano on a cast of thousands, and then a lot of Wilmer Flores at third. Amazing that the defense was bad. some interesting stuff about Chapman. He went to high school with Nolan Arenado. So he didn't get to play third base on his high school team because Nolan Arenado was there. And he went to college with J.D. Davis, whose job he just stole at third base.
Right.
Which makes J.D. a pretty interesting, I think, trade candidate. He only makes like $7 million. He's a pretty good player. And if you're a team, I think of two teams immediately that don't have a third baseman, basically, and they're the Milwaukee Brewers and the Seattle Mariners. And the Mariners and Giants make a trade like every 15 minutes.
Right.
So
usually involving Mitch Haniger.
Whose turn is it with Mitch? You guys just got him back. You can't send him back yet. Let's wait a couple of months.
We're pretty sure that Christopher Morel is. We're gonna go with him at third base.
I think so. I don't know. Yeah, because you're wondering would the Cubs be interested in a J.D. Davis as a stop?
Just throwing it out there. Yeah.
It wouldn't be the worst idea because their current lineup, with Morel at third, they don't really have a DH. So even if you thought Morel was going to be your everyday third baseman, you could still trade for JD and figure out he'll get a lot of DH at bats, and then he can spell Morel at third. It wouldn't preclude it.
Right.
I just like the fact that they're doing it. I can't imagine that he can't play it well enough to just leave him there. I mean, right now they basically have three choices down there. They either go with Patrick Wisdom, so it's funny. It's really fun to watch him strike out 200 times. Or you have Nick Madrigal, who will have an OPS of about 660. Or you can go with Morel, and he might mix in a few extra errors that the other two wouldn't, but you'll actually get production out of that spot. I guess the thing that would argue against it, though, is if you don't really have a DH, you know, why are you sacrificing your defense at third? Assuming you are. If he plays it well, you don't worry about it. You don't have a decision to make. He just plays it. And if it turns out he's pretty shaky down there, then until you fill third base with a real player, then it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, I don't think.
Bush is not an option at third base. I know he's played other infield positions before.
Well,
maybe
I mean,
third base.
At some point, relatively early in the season, I think they will have to figure that out. They wanted to play first because it's the position he's least bad at. But you also have, with Cody back, if Pete Crow Armstrong gets off to a hot start in Iowa, which he will because everybody hits at Iowa and he's a good player. If you think he's ready, then it makes sense to put Cody at first and then you got to find a spot for Bush. Now, if Morel is playing well, I think Bush just DHs. Maybe that's why they haven't gone out to actively fill the DH spot, thinking that it's inevitable that Cody's going to be our first baseman at some point and Bush is going to be our DH. So why would we bother to pay $7 million to somebody when we think we already have it solved? But until then, they're just going to be rotating through guys that you really wish they weren't wasting the bats on, like Mike Talkman and Nick Madrigal and Patrick Wisdom. It's not a real dynamic bench that the Cubs are going to roll out there. They have a good lineup now, but their bench is a little lacking.
Well, maybe Wisdom he's streaky. Maybe for a few weeks.
When he's hot, he's a really good player. Last May, he was homering like every other day. And you're like, oh, he figured it out. That's always the thing. You always think, oh, now he's finally figured it out. And then you realize that he hasn't. And it's just going to go back to. He's not a bad bench piece to have. He's athletic enough that you can stick him in right or left if you need to. And he can play first and third. So he has a legitimate use.
Madrigal's really the guy that.
In a perfect world, they would be trying to decide between Nick Madrigal and Miles Mastroboni. But if this, it looks like they're both going to make the team out of spring training. Mm-hmm. That's not great. You don't really need both of those guys. You know, Miles can play more positions defensively. Miles is a better base runner, but everybody's a better base runner than Nick Madrigal. And last year from the All-Star break on, he was a better hitter than Nick.
Right.
He's just a better player. He's a more useful player. And maybe Nick was worried he was going to get traded because he came out of the game in the first inning yesterday with a cramp. Oh, I'm hurt. You can't trade me. Look, I'm hurt. Hey, we got you while you were on the
injured list.
We got you when you were on the injured list, Nick. That's not going to work. Damn it.
And when I say stretch this thing out, I don't mean my leg. I mean me being here.
It's that guy has never – he can't stay on the field. You know, like I said, the Cubs literally, when they traded for him, he was on the 60-day injured list with the White Sox. He got hurt twice his first year with the Cubs. Last year, he got hurt twice. And the best injury was a game in Milwaukee. He was playing third base. There was a pop-up. He ran over by the third base, by the stands, and he bumped into the stands. And he hurt his hamstring, and he was out for a month. He bumped into the stands. It's like, what are you made out of? But then it's funny, he's also repeating mistakes. He attributed his injuries to, like, his first year, he came up for, half a season with the White Sox and just hit the shit out of everything. He hit 340. And everybody's like, see? This is why we made him the fourth pick in the draft. He's the fourth pick in the draft. But he didn't have any power. And they told him, we're going to need you to just drive the ball more. So he bulked up, which on a guy who's 5'2 is comical to see. And that's where he started to get injured. And he blamed it on he'd lost flexibility and he was going to get back to that. So what did he do this winter? Because he's playing third base now? He bulked up again. It's like, all right, well, you get ready to spend 120 days on the injury list, Nick. That'll be great. We'll wave at you for the 42 games you're healthy enough to play. But yeah, so you wonder about the remaining Boris free agents, Blake Snell, as I love to call him, Blake, and Jordan Montgomery, two very good pitchers. Well, one very good. Well, they both have their weirdness about them.
Like Jordan Montgomery has become he's better than he was 3 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, Keith Law always says you're signing a number three with Jordan Montgomery, but I think he's a two.
2.4. Yeah.
He's not your eight. He's not an ace on a good team.
Right.
But he's a guy that in the second or third play, I guess if you're a three, you get the ball in the third playoff game. But he's probably the guy you want to give the ball to in the second playoff game. You want him to take a start, especially since he's been so good.
That's fine. I'm comfortable there, yes.
Yeah. And then Snell is a guy who's won two Cy Youngs, but can be really bad for stretches where he just can't throw any strikes. And even last year, led the league in walks and won the Cy Young.
I did that on purpose, he says.
Yeah, make it hard. Make me harder to hit.
Right.
If you're going to chase it out of the zone, I'm going to throw it out of the zone. And if you're not going to chase it out of the zone, I'm still going to throw it out of the zone. Because the situation they don't want to find themselves in is, I always think back to Craig Kimbrell not signing in 2019. Is that what it was?
Yeah, until June.
Yeah, and then, you're way behind. He was throwing batting practice or pitching at a high school. Well, that's not the same thing. They're getting now to the point where even if you brought them in today, and I know they're throwing and they're doing all their stuff, you'd be lucky to get them ramped up to go, especially Snell. If he only throws 60 pitches, he's two innings, he's done. But the longer this gets, if they're like, well, we're going to wait for, you know, somebody will get injured and then a team will really need you. Well, then you've got to go through the whole ramp up, and it's like, at some point, I think you, both those guys have to basically take a deal that is like the ones that Chapman and Bellinger signed, except there's so much more risk to a team signing a pitcher to a deal like that. And I think back to the deal the Giants signed for Carlos Rodon, which was like $27 million with a second, with a player option for like $27 million more. And it worked out fine for them. They got a really good year out of him, and then he opted out. And then he didn't pitch again for like almost a year.
Right.
If he'd have gotten hurt, instead of getting hurt, getting ready for his first spring training with the Yankees, if he got hurt at the end of his Giants season, they'd have had to pay him the $27 million to basically not pitch the next year. So it may look, as a fan, you're like, well, big deal. Sign Snell, give him $30 million for this year and give him whatever he wants for his option. You know he's going to opt out. Well, if he has a bad year or he gets hurt, you're paying that money next year. It's a lot more risk to do that with a pitcher than there is with a position player.
Right.
So you kind of wonder if they're just going to have to literally take a one-year deal.
I asked myself if I like put myself in their position, would I be willing to do that? And with Snell's body of work, two Cy Youngs, for all of the questions about how he goes about it, he misses starts every year, pretty much. So there's that too. Not only does he have a reputation for throwing too many pitches in too short amount of time, but he will go on the injured list at some point. You know, Montgomery has kind of built himself. I mean, there's lots of precedent for teams signing people like Jordan Montgomery, and sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. So I have to think that he's maybe got the Rangers in the back of his mind that, you know, maybe that's where he's going to go. I don't know. But you'd have to really shove your pride down to accept that.
I don't.
But at some point, you know, this is why the owners want a deadline. You know, the deadline, it isn't the same thing exactly, but opening day's coming.
Yeah.
And things get weird, like, you know, when you miss that deadline, if you will. And it seems like the year is never quite right or the same. And if you come in late and that late. And and then that affects your value for the next contract. So this is why owners want a deadline. So they put the screws to the players so they commit.
I think it was John Paul Morosi who either heard this or had a theory that there was a Shark Tank guy on an airplane going to Toronto. No, that was a different time. That was he had this he thinks that Montgomery has gotten short-term contract offers from teams. But in his mind, if he's going to take a short-term one, he wants to go back to the Rangers.
Right.
And the Rangers seem to be paralyzed by their TV contract and the amount of money. They have a huge payroll anyway. You know,
yes.
And the Rangers are kind of like, well, he really wants to come here for 1 year. So the longer we wait, maybe it comes down, and then we will be able to get him for a year, and then that'll be great. With Snell, the only rumor we've heard so far was that the Yankees looked into offering him. This was back earlier. He wouldn't even get this much now. That's a lot. They were like, ooh, we'll give him 1 year, $40 million. And with the luxury tax, that would cost the Yankees $84 million. And they're like, okay, that might be too much. But you kind of wonder, is there a Yankee deal, 1 year, like $30 million deal? Blake comes, pitches for the Yankees for a year, and then we'll figure it out. Take another shot next year. And then I know the people in the Bay Area think that the Giants are seriously interested, but doing the same thing, kind of waiting. Like, you know, they waited on the Chapman thing. You know, he was looking for $150 million. That was the deal he wanted. He wanted like a,
right.
You know, a 6-year, $150 million deal. And he ends up signing a 3-year, $54 million deal. That's not the same, I don't think.
It isn't quite.
Still a lot of money. I don't, once again, no bake sale for Matt Chapman. But it's weird to have two good pitchers out there, the reigning Cy Young winner and the guy who's a proven postseason pitcher, and it's like, you don't want to throw around the words like collusion.
Right.
But there's something weird. You know, there's a maybe it's as simple as you don't have Steve Cohen right now being like, screw it, well, I'll pay it.
Right.
And a year from now, he may very well be back in that screw it, I'll pay it mode, but he's not going to do it this year.
I think, the people who don't, I mean, the people who don't think that there really is collusion, I kind of wonder, like, well, I mean, you haven't been paying attention to baseball owners for very long, but if they are right, and that it isn't that, but it is just like thinking front office people who are very strident in their, you know, you don't pay this much for a person, or we just happen to have a whole bunch of front offices with people who are very money ball, you know, still mentality kind of thing going on. I didn't phrase that very well, but it isn't so much collusion. It's just that, well, a lot of these front offices happen to have the same kind of thinkers. And I suppose that's possible, but knowing that the history of how owners have operated, I'm suspicious of that being the only thing going on.
Yeah, that argument, I get it, and I've heard it. It feels reverse engineered to me.
Right.
All right, what's a logical way we can explain why we've all decided at the same time we don't want to spend any money? Well, how about the fact that we all have a bunch of assholes in our front offices who should be working at hedge funds, but instead are working for us, and they all put a dollar amount on players, and they all basically come to the same dollar amount, and then the agents are like, well, no, the market says this guy should be worth this, and none of them want to budge.
Right.
It's the same thing to me.
Yeah, the same effect.
You know, it's... You could dress it up and say, oh, no, we're just, you know, Jed's wonderful intelligent spending. It's like, usually. And before the last CBA, they talked about players would get almost identical offers from teams when they did get an offer. Like, they get offers from three different teams, and they're almost, like, you could have mixed them around on the table and wouldn't remember which one was from which team because they're all so similar. And they're like, this just doesn't smell right. I mean, this is that defies, you know, that's not coincidence. There's a reason.
Yeah. Right.
All right. I want to ask you a question. You Kansas City person.
Oh man.
The Royals. Have you seen the Royals uniforms?
Yeah.
They have the normal sized letters on them.
They do.
And do you know why they have those?
I do.
Because they basically told baseball, fuck it, we want to put the real ones back on the shirts. And baseball went, fine.
The Royals were so proactive about it. That's all you had to do was say, no, we don't want the tiny, tiny letters. The tiny curved letters. Ill-spaced. We want our spaces, our curves, our letters.
The UniWatch guy, Paul Lucas, had a picture of just there's a runner at first base and there's the Royals first baseman and they're back to back and say, oh, this uniform looks nice. And that uniform looks like crap.
Well, people at first thought, oh, they must be using last year's uniforms because, you know, in some kind of protest or hold until Fanatics gets the updated, you know, the complete replacement uniforms back, but that's not what it was. It's that they got out ahead of it and said, nope, we don't like this. We would like the old kind. And they acquiesced.
Yep.
I'm a little surprised.
Baseball did not push back. apparently baseball told them. So the reason this is so stupid, the reason the letters got smaller is that, and I never know what to call this. I had Andrew Lawrence on, we were talking, he had written a uniform story for the Guardian. And we were talking about
kerning. Baseball. Are you getting the kerning?
No, they okay, so if you picture the back of a jersey, one that has the trim that goes like, you know, the two lines that go like up on either side of the buttons, then goes around to the back on the neck.
Yeah.
I forget what they call the piping. If you had a jersey like that, where the old logo, the old MLB logo was before, was above that.
Yeah.
Now it's
below. Higher on the neck.
And it's, whether you have piping or not, they're always in the same, they're in the same spot every jersey. So they moved the logo down, which they felt would make it more visible, which Major League Baseball liked. Well, because of that, then they decided it's going to be too crowded. We don't want to put the big letters on. And basically what baseball, when the Royals say we want to do this, baseball says, fine, as long as you don't move the logo. So it does kind of run into, but it looks fine. It,
because it's the more, it is the more prominent of the two, it doesn't look, you know, out of place.
Yeah.
Because it looks, you know, if you focused, if some, you know, if we hadn't had this controversy, if that hadn't been talked about, and people kind of looked at the uniforms and went, you know, that MLB logo is a little crowded there. But otherwise, it looks fine. People wouldn't have given a crap.
I said the same thing to Drew. It was, if they hadn't messed up the nameplates, no fan would care.
Right.
The players would be whining about all this stuff, and the fans wouldn't give a shit. Yeah, it looks fine to us. We don't care. We don't have to wear it. I mean, the fans who wanted to buy the ones from Fanatics would be, because they cost a fortune, and they're like ironing on patches that are sewn on the real uniforms and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That's
something I've complained about before, the iron-on patch thing. In previous years, because they've been doing that with like the World Series logos and stuff, and you can see it's flaking off and whatever during the series. So I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, that's fine. But there's still stuff like the Cardinals played a road game and wore their full road uniforms the other day, and the pants don't match. The pants are a different shade of gray as the jerseys.
Yeah.
And the same thing. People are like, oh, they must be wearing last year's pants. Like, nope, the color lot, the dye lots are just wrong. Some player has decided that he's not gonna wear this year's pants. They just don't fit him. And the only thing visible that's different is the belt loops are different on the new ones. So he's just asked the clubby, the clubby's gonna take the belt loops off his old pants and put the new ones on the new one so he can wear the pants.
Right.
The Padres are still wearing their old pants because their new ones haven't come in yet. That's a perfect Fanatics thing. Because if you ever order anything from them, shipping date is like it's just a wish. It's 2 to 4 weeks.
Yeah, shipping suggestion.
You might get it Thursday, or you might get it in barely in time for Christmas if you order it today.
Right.
So their pants aren't in, so they're wearing their. And then some of the players are worried because when they get the pants, they know there's going to be a lot of adjustments need to be made to them. And if they're off to Korea, they're just going to have to wear the old pants because they're not going to have time to fix their new ones.
Speaking of things that defy credulity, like these free agent offers that all happen to be the same, you know, how about baseball coming out with the stories that the pants are those are last year's pants, you know, you're mistaken about
it's the same fabric. That's what they were telling everybody. Jerseys changed, but the pants are almost identical, so I don't know what you're talking about. And like the fact you could see Casey Schmidt's nuts, that was because of the lighting in the studio.
Or last year, we just weren't looking for them.
That's right. Yeah, I think it was the Paul Lucas story. Maybe it was one in The Athletic that linked to it. It was talking about a bunch of players are like, well, I'm going to start wearing black underwear now.
Or with hearts on them.
I thought everybody wore, like, a lot of players don't wear sliding shorts anymore. So I always thought that was just a thing. You just wore those to, you know, because slightly less chance of getting a big bruise on your ass when you slid and more comfortable.
Well, maybe last year with there were more stolen bases last year. So maybe that'll change. I don't know.
Yeah.
They'll get in the habit again. When you first brought up the uniforms with the Royals, the first thing I thought of wasn't the whole Fanatics thing. But it was, they have a sponsorship logo on their shoulder as well. It's the Quick Trip, gas stations, convenience stores. And it's just huge red, doesn't go with the rest of the Royals have they stole from the Dodgers, but it's still an iconic look or has grown into that. And maybe they got ahead of the name thing on the back to squash the, not outrage, but the whatever at the Quick Trip logo being on the shoulder like that.
So the weird thing about the logos when you wear it and you have an advertiser patch is that they will vary from arm to arm depending on the player.
Yeah.
because they want as much as possible for the ad to be facing out when you're batting. So if even if you're a switch hitter, there you're going to get most bats left-handed, so they're going to put that patch on your right shoulder so it's facing the camera. And if you're a pitcher, they want your lead arm. So if you're right-handed, it's going to go on your left. And somebody noticed, you know, the Cubs have the little crawling bear C on their thing. And yeah, on different players, it's on different sides. So they're they're ready now to slap a patch on. I was shocked when they went to London last year. They had an ad patch for the series, for those two games. And I thought, well, that thing's never coming off. This is just the new thing. And they came back and it wasn't. It was only for that series.
Now, that is something that doesn't really matter, but I am kind of quietly outraged about that they would change the uniform itself to accommodate the patch. I say that's a no-no. And maybe it's coming from the same place that players being superstitious are or whatever, but I just think that's bad luck or something and you shouldn't do it. But I understand why.
Cubs have some really weird uniform quirks. Some of them are cool and some of them are just weird. Yeah. One of them was on their blue alternate jerseys, they have the National League logo on the sleeve. They're the only team that has the National League logo that's gone. They took it off last year. And I'm sure that was in part to get ready in case they want to slap an ad on.
Right.
They also, this caused phone calls to Ed Hardig, the Cubs historian. The Cubs on the big Cub on their pinstripes, the trademark is on the logo. So it says Cubs TM. Mm-hmm. And it's been that way forever. And they were the only team that had a trademark on their logo. And it even got to the point, this is so, I think it's dumb. They went back and they looked at like special uniforms. So like when it was Father's Day and they went to the blue thing. And so the Cubs was not the regular red, white, and blue. It was like the baby blue and the black. It did not have the trademark on it. And they asked this when they called Ed Hardig. He said, well, no, the Cubs, they only do that when it's the full logo represented. It's like they still own the trade. Like if I took that Cub logo and I just changed the color, I would get sued. So I wouldn't take the trademark off. The trademark is off. They decided they didn't need it anymore. And it's like, at this point, why would you mess with it? To me, it looks weird. I got so used to that little, when he can't read it, there's just a little blue, looks like a squiggle from a distance, and that's gone.
Right. In fairness, I guess, you know, I referenced that, you know, last year's pants, the MLB says last year's pants are the same. And you mentioned before that the grays not matching up on certain uniforms. And I remember that was an issue when the White Sox switched over to their current jerseys that they would wear on the road. They'd wear the black jerseys a lot because the tops and the grays didn't match. So that is, if that's happening with Fanatics, in their defense, quote, air quotes.
But the weird thing about it is so Nike used to design uniforms that Majestic would make them. And then Fanatics bought Majestic, and Fanatics took over the Majestic. They build it, they make them in the exact same place where they used to be made. And they just can't understand why the quality would be worse. It's like, well, why is the quality? Everything you guys put out, it sucks. That's why. If you follow the Fanatics Sucks Twitter account, you know, they've all kinds of examples of like somebody orders a San Francisco Giants shirt and it's got the New York Giants logo on it. Or it's like, you know, it's like, that's because the guy you're paying, you know, $2.50 an hour in your sweatshop doesn't know that those aren't the same. He looks at, there's Giants and he pulls it up and he irons it on the shirt and he sends it and they send it out. And that company has a monopoly. You can't buy stuff. Even if you order something from the MLB store, you go to Cubs.com and order a jersey, it's coming to you from Fanatics. You can't avoid it. And Drew and I were talking about this. The only way really is you have to do it the old-fashioned way. You have to walk into a store so you can look and see if it's a piece of crap or not before you buy it. But how practical, if you don't live in the area that your favorite team is, you're screwed, basically. You're just going to have to. And their customer service sucks. So it's not like if they get it wrong, it's going to be an easy fix.
Right.
And they've got everything. And they're going to start making the NHL uniforms next year. So now we're going to get a whole, that'll we'll have a Canadian uproar. It'll be international. Well, there should be a Canadian uproar now with the Blue Jays, I guess.
Right.
Canadian uproar. That was Rush's third album. Is that right?
That is not right, but it's funny enough for me, anyhow.
I learned this today because I didn't pay any attention at the time. So the MLB Network had their used to be 30 teams in 30 days. Now it's 30 teams in 15 days because they're doubling up. And they were doing it on the Padres. And Fernando Tatis won the Platinum Glove last year.
Yeah.
In right field. It's pretty amazing. The guy with a position change won it. And it made me think about Gold Glove outfielders again. And, of course, the Cubs have one. They have two. But, you know, Ian Happ has won two of them. And a very bad thing I think has happened to Ian is that the Mets have moved Brandon Nimmo to left field.
Uh-oh.
Where I would hope he will actually win the Gold Glove, considering he's
changing
an excellent,
the guard.
He's an excellent defensive outfielder, and Ian's really not. Now, the one flaw in that is that he's moving over because Harrison Bader is going to play center. Who also a really good defensive outfielder, but a guy who plays about 12 games a year. Right. Somewhere in the opener, he will run into the fence at Citi Field at full speed, and then he'll be back in September. So if I were Brandon Nimmo, I wouldn't get rid of the center fielder glove yet.
Right.
Is that a thing? Do they have?
Probably not. Maybe. That's not a bad question.
You might wear a slightly smaller one in left because so you can get rid of the ball faster.
I've never asked that question, and I'm probably going to forget, but I'm going to try and remember and ask some players that.
I don't know. I may have told this story probably on this podcast. I'm sure I told one of my podcasts. In Little League, we were too old for this to have happened, but it happened anyway. Just for my own amusement, when I went to the outfield to play left field, the center fielder was left-handed, and I'm right-handed. I throw right-handed. I bat left-handed. I still do. I say that I'm getting a lot of at-bats these days, but I used to bat left-handed. If you handed me a bat, I would bat left-handed. And when we were warming up, occasionally we would change gloves and play catch the wrong way just for fun. And we were both pretty good at it. And we decided in a game that we were leading relatively comfortably to just leave it that way. So we played an inning with the gloves on our wrong hands. And a smart guy, when a runner reached first base, probably would have gone over to the center fielder and switched gloves back. But I didn't do that. Ball got hit to me, and I went and scooped it up with the wrong hand. And made a throw to third, and I held the runner at second. And I could hear a voice from the crowd. It was my dad wanting to know, what the fuck is going on? And then I had to run over and switch gloves. That was a pretty good throw, though. You know, I managed to hold the guy. We did it again.
He said what?
Maybe. I think he probably did. He was mad, like irate. He also got mad at me. I switch hit in a game one time. And batted right-handed against a right-handed pitcher because they didn't have a lefty, and I wanted to bat right-handed once. And he yelled at me during the at-bat for, get back to the right side. Get back to your right side. I'm like, I am on the right side. We did it again. I caught a ball with the wrong hand in a game once, too. So I'm very proud of that.
With the glove or barehanded?
No, I was wearing the left-handed glove and caught a ball.
I see.
Yeah, I didn't catch it with him. I didn't Kevin Mitchell it. That wasn't that good. But I would be fine if major leaguers would do stuff like that once in a while, just for fun.
Some Savannah bananas.
Who wouldn't mind if Cody and Ian swapped gloves for an inning just to see what it looks like when they have to throw?
Maybe I'm still amazed they used to leave their gloves out there.
Yeah. You just pick whatever you wanted to use. That to me is one of the weirdest baseball traditions, and one I can understand why it went away. Now, okay, did it start because they were literally just using each other's gloves? To me, the way it was explained to me was just they just didn't take them back to the dugout. Like, how much did they think the glove weighed? Like, I'm going to leave that. I can't carry this all the way back there. I'll just leave it here.
It had to have started as a share thing. It had to have.
I can't imagine why you would have done it otherwise.
And why would you're telling me that nobody ever tripped over that or the ball didn't hit it?
Yeah,
it
went, that's the thing. I'm sure the ball hit the glove. Is it just part of the field? Is it like if it hits an ump or is it dead?
Now, maybe by the time like the 1920s were around, they didn't share gloves anymore. But I can totally see when the gloves first started, sharing a glove. I can see that. But still, I don't understand how, as an obstacle, what you throw it in least foul territory or something. I don't know. It's always like kind of neat, but I don't get it.
So who was the? I can't remember how you pronounce his last name. But the guy, it was Venditte. The guy who could pitch with both hands.
I think it's.
Is it Vendite or is it just Vendita? Whatever it is.
Vendite.
So he had a glove. That he could wear on either hand,
right?
And if
it
you've
was
ever
a by
seen,
glove or something,
yeah. If you've ever seen an old timey baseball mitt, I would guess that the ones they left in the outfield, it didn't matter what hand you wore it on,
right?
I mean, it was basically just a piece of rawhide, like it was an oven mitt, basically,
right?
You just turn it the other, flip it over, and now you can wear it on the other hand. It makes
or
me very
a situation
weary.
Where it would only matter to a left-handed person because they're discriminated against. Yeah. Like who cares what they do? Cares what they think. Whatever. I mean,
it makes me very leery of batting stats from the old times.
Yeah.
It's like, who the hell was catching anything?
Right.
I mean,
they must've dropped stuff all the time.
Yeah. You can't tell me that, you know, Cap Anson hitting 337 or whatever back in 1907. If he didn't,
right.
They'd have put real gloves on those dudes. What's Cap hitting?
And no black people.
Right, that's right. And he also would have refused to play because it's black people.
He would just bring it up when it wasn't relevant, just to make sure. You're not thinking about adding a black person to this league, are you?
Right.
No, Mr. Anson?
One of only two Cup managers to ever win a World Series.
Hmm.
No, that's not right. It was Frank. Was it Cap?
Oh,
God. What did I just say?
Well, no. Yeah, I think you're
it's
wrong.
Frank Chance? Player manager?
Yeah, Frank Chance.
Yeah, I don't know why I thought Cap Anson.
It wasn't Evers or Tinker, was it?
Born in 1852.
That's pretty young.
Yeah, career batting average 334. Yeah, put a glove on those dudes.
Slavery wasn't bad.
All right. So last thing I want to talk about just real quick. I don't know if you saw it. I almost forgot to record it, but I watched it. It was a pretty cool thing. MLB Network did, one of their, it's their 15th anniversary or something. And they're revisiting some of their old series. And one of them is the baseball's greatest games. And so they had Bob Costas and Tom Verducci with Joe Maddon and Terry Francona rewatching game 7 of the 2016.
I heard about it. I didn't see it happen. Stop it. Go ahead.
And it's good. I mean, Cubs still win, which made me happy.
Phew.
Joe, I think, gives a really good explanation for one thing I always thought was unfair, where people bitching about him taking Kyle Hendricks out too soon. Because we saw it play out in real time, where they wanted, their whole game plan was Kyle Hendricks to John Lester to roll as Chapman. That's all we're using today. And Kyle got in a little bit of trouble in the second inning where the bullpen got warm, but it wasn't Lester. It was actually Mike Montgomery warmed up. And then like 4 hours later,
I remember that.
He's warming up again to come in. But then in the fourth inning, or was it actually the fifth? Whatever it was. Carlos Santana should have struck out. Oh, missed a call. He walks. It extends the inning. And now you're to the point where Lester's been warming up so long, you either have to put him in the game or you're not going to be able to use him at all. So Joe's like, I took Kyle out earlier than I wanted to. Verducci actually pointed out, though, that Kyle's stat line looks good, but he gave up some rockets in there, too. And it was like, okay, I want to get him out. That one, pretty good. The other thing that fans get on Joe about all the time was in the bottom of the ninth, after or top of the ninth. Jason Hayward got on, stole second. Jan Gomes, who only had one arm at the time, threw the ball into center field. Hayward's on third. There's only one out. Javi's up. Joe had Javi bunt with a full count, and Javi bunted foul and was out. His explanation for that did not work at all. He basically harkened back to one of his mentors, a former Cub manager, Don Zimmer, who said, if you think of it, you should do it. Now, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. If you have a terrible idea, you better just go with it, because it's a hunch. And he's like, so I thought of it, and, you know, he was going up this pitcher, and, you know, the pitchers he's throwing, and Javi's a great bunter, and he's going to get this down. And then the one thing, I don't know if this was true or not, it probably is, because I think we feel like they probably have sat around and watched this game like a million times, like it was, you know, like when high school football, when we, you know, we made the playoffs and we won a playoff game, we would all like hang out even that next summer and we would rewatch it, you know.
Yeah.
Most of these guys, especially both managers, they've never seen this game again because they lived it. They don't need to rewatch it again. But the Joe, when he saw the pitch that Javi missed, was basically like, how the fuck didn't he bunt that? How did he not get that down? He was like mad in the moment.
Doubling down.
Like, see, look how right I was. He should have got that down, and that would have scored the run, and we would have gone over. Anyway, I thought it was good, and Terry is really good. And Terry talks through the whole, you know, the most momentous decision he made in the game was, it's on the exact same play. Hayward gets to third with one out. So while the Cubs are figuring out what they're going to do, you know, offensively, he takes Michael Martinez and puts him in right field instead of Coco Crisp, because he's thinking to himself, if a ball is hit to shallow right field, Hayward's going to score. We're going to end up losing the World Series because my right fielder can't throw. So I'll put Michael out, who's got a really good arm, and that will at least guard against it. They won't be able to score. Well, then the problem with that is the final, with the chance to tie the game with a runner at second with two outs in the 10th, Michael Martinez is batting, and he's the only guy. Terry doesn't have anybody else. Mm. And then Joe retold the Miguel Montero story, which is great, about actually Joe takes a pretty good passive aggressive whacks at David Ross, which I really enjoy. And he prefaces them all with, oh, you know, what a smart ball player, what a great guy, great baseball man, blah, blah, blah. But he goes, you know, because Ross, for all of the glory that he has, you know, enjoyed from the World Series game, I mean, he came in and he immediately made an error on a ball that was hit about 3 feet by Jason Kipnis. Then a ball bounced in front of him, went off his mask, a two-run scored. He did hit a home run off of Andrew Miller. But then when Rolas came in to pitch in the eighth, he called nothing but fastballs. And you could see they kept showing the at-bat, and Coco is barely, like, hanging on. And he's having to cheat to get to every fastball. And it's just begging for one slider, not even a strike. Just throw a slider. He's already started his swing. He's not going to be able to. Instead, the pitchers are getting lower and lower and lower because the roll is getting tired. And he basically throws one that can, that could be hit for a home run. So he talks about that. But then he talks about how, and I've always thought this, Ross led off the top of the ninth with a walk. And he got pinch run for by the great Chris Coughlin. That put Miguel Montero in the game for the bottom of the ninth. And Miguel, because he had barely caught in the playoffs, wanted Aroldis to throw more sliders because he felt he had a better chance of catching them. And that was how they got through that. That's how they got through the inning. They had to go through Kipnis, Liriano, and Santana, I think. No, Ramirez. They got through their three best hitters out, and then they went on. But anyway, this is a lot of me babbling to get to this story where, you know, Carl Edwards Jr., who's also back with the Cubs now, gets the first two guys out, and then clearly is all of a sudden like, holy shit, I'm going to be on the mound when we win the World Series, and they couldn't throw a strike. They have to take him out, and they bring Mike Montgomery in. And Montgomery, who's last warmed up the day before, by now, I guess it wasn't actually after midnight. No, it was. That wasn't. Anyway, gets to the mound and he's like, I couldn't throw a strike in the bullpen. He says that to Montero. Miguel looks at him and goes, we'll figure something out. And just walks back to home plate. Called two curveballs. First one he threw was a perfect strike. And the second one was a ground ball to Chris Bryant. But it was fun to hear to hear them talk about that stuff. And I've always liked that, like that show where they get prominent people from those games to talk about some of the little stuff. That game has been picked apart so much that you feel like you know everything, but there was still stuff that both Terry and Joe said that you otherwise wouldn't have gleaned from it.
Did Joe talk about Hayward's speech at all? Did you learn anything new there?
No, because Joe knew that the players were meeting in that weight room, and Joe just wanted to leave them alone. Joe said that Joe West told him that the rain delay was going to be 17 minutes. And he goes, I figured it was just funny, Joe. Like, you can't tell me it's going to be 15 minutes or 30 minutes. You got to be 17 on the dot. And it was exactly that. But apparently the groundskeeper had told Joe it's going to blow through in about 17 minutes. That's exactly it. It ended up coincidentally. That's exactly how long it was. It was Terry who said, no, it wasn't. This was on something else, or maybe Terry was talking about how Kipnis said they regretted the fact that the Indians didn't do something similar. They like just all went back to their lockers and hung out. I think it was Terry talking about it because both locker rooms had the plastic up.
Right.
You know, for the champagne celebration. And the Indians walked in and were like, oh shit. You know, they're like opening the plastic to get into their lockers and all this stuff. And I think it was Kipnis who said they wish they had gotten together and talked. Because they knew, they were told when they went in, it was not going to be a long rain delay. They didn't go in to start playing cards and, you know, do whatever. They knew it wasn't going to be very long. So that was interesting. I didn't know that. Because I don't remember watching it knowing it was going to be that short.
Mm-hmm.
I was just still freaked out from
the
Cubs blowing it. But, and they, Joe talked about how, just like how much Aroldis was crying. Yeah, you know, he thought he blew the World Series.
Yeah.
He was apparently super upset. Like, when you think back and Joe talks about how upset he was, it's like, it's really surprising he went back out to pitch the ninth.
Mm-hmm. I remember being surprised.
Yeah. I mean, A, from a workload standpoint.
Yeah.
But B, just from the emotional, you know, they knew, they looked at him in the dugout like, oh God, he's done. And, he retired the last four guys he faced and he's the winning pitcher in Game 7 of the World Series. And Joe talked about, he said the biggest mistake he made in the entire playoffs was they had brought Aroldis in the eighth in Game 6 just to quell a threat. Like, Kipnis was up, I think. And he's like, Aroldis is going to come in. He's going to get us out of this. And then the Cubs scored two runs in the top of the ninth to make the lead comfortable. And he didn't get somebody up right away. And Aroldis went out and started. He warmed up and he pitched the first batter. And then he brought either Pedro Strop or Travis Wood. I don't remember who finished it. And Joe said, I screwed that up. Aroldis should not have had to throw in any of those pitches knowing we were going to need him the next night.
Mm.
Yeah, basically, he's pitching in a blowout at that point with a game the very next night.
Right. So,
and what did Terry? He had something similar about, he knew Andrew Miller was on fumes. They had basically, you know,
ridden him.
And they started Corey Kluber, and that's the Game 7 of the World Series is the only game in Corey Kluber's career where he didn't strike out a batter. He also didn't get a swing and a miss from the Cubs.
Right.
And he had dominated them in the first two games.
Right.
And he just wasn't the same guy because he was tired. So anyway, for all those people that have made it to the end of this and haven't watched it yet, I highly recommend that.
It sounds like they would still enjoy it to me anyway.
Yeah. And they'd be like, well, glad don't told me every story that they're going to tell.
Right.
All right. Well, when are the When's the Soul series? That's not fake opening day. It's early opening day. That's coming up in 2 weeks, I think.
Yeah, it is. Not prepared to answer that question at this
time.
We're
going to have some real games. Boy, that means I got to get my fantasy keepers in. We got to have our,
Yeah, we just had that. The 17th and the 18th. So 12 days. Pretty soon.
And then 23 days for everybody else.
Right.
It's funny. I would say usually by this time, I'm so anxious for baseball because I've been sitting here and the weather's been awful and we haven't had a winter.
Right. We did for a while.
A couple of times we had 4 days where it was really cold. And then ever since then, it was 70 yesterday. And it feels like, why the hell hasn't baseball started a month ago? My allergies are ready for baseball. I don't know why baseball isn't playing.
Right.
All right. Well, thanks.
So hopefully we'll talk again.
Many of us have herpes.
This is rough, but it's also finished.
It's fitting. It's got to be done with one of the best games of all time. Just unbelievable. Got to congratulate the Dolan family.